She's a senior research scientist at the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research and has an academic research appointment at the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health, Department of Health Policy and Management. Her research focuses on the social and environmental factors related to physical activity, dietary behavior, overweight and obesity, and chronic health conditions such as asthma and diabetes.
Thank you, Lenny. Okay, I have no financial relationships to disclose. And I would like to start off acknowledging my co-authors, Joelle Wallstein, Harold Goldstein, Sam Kronholz, and Allison Diamant. Great folks to work with. And also, our funding for this research came from the California Endowment. All right, well, I don't think I need to go into a lot of detail about this background. I think most of you already know that currently more than a third of adults in the United States are obese, that this increases their risk for serious medical problems. And as a part of the work around how do we address this issue, there's a growing body of research that's examined the impact of the food environment on obesity and dietary behavior. In terms of this work, one thing that people have looked at is what kinds of food outlets are available around where people live. And this is just an example of some of the types of less healthy food outlets that folks have looked at: fast food restaurants, convenience stores. The picture on your left is actually a street in Los Angeles called Figueroa. And on the right is a 7-Eleven store, which is actually not in Los Angeles, but was a picture that I could get for free. And then healthier food outlets, an example of a farmer's market, and the inside of a grocery store, showing, you know, many options for produce. But one of the issues that's come out of this body of research looking at the relationship between food environment and dietary behaviors and obesity is inconsistent findings across studies. So several studies have found, for example, that healthier food outlets like supermarkets are associated with better dietary outcomes and reduced likelihood of being obese. But other studies, and have found that less healthy food outlets like fast food restaurants and convenience stores are associated with an increased likelihood of obesity and worse dietary outcomes. But other studies have found no association between the food environment and dietary outcomes or obesity. So there are a couple of different factors that could contribute to inconsistent findings across studies. One is different populations that have been studied. Are people looking at kids? Are they looking at adults? Are they looking at urban areas or rural areas in terms of different settings? There are different data sources that people use. But what I'm going to be focusing on is differences in methodology, and specifically the impact of using different indicators of the food environment. And much of the research that's looked at this relationship between food environment and diet and obesity have identified specific types of food outlets like grocery stores or supermarkets or fast food restaurants and tried to look at whether there is a relationship between that type of store and obesity or dietary behavior. Some other work has developed food environment indices that are often relative measures of healthy versus less healthy food outlets available in an area. So the questions that I'm going to be trying to address today are, first of all, is there an association between food environment and dietary behaviors and obesity? And secondly, is this association sensitive to the kind of measure that we use to characterize the food environment? In this research, we used data from the 2007 California Health Interview Survey, which is a telephone survey conducted in California where about 50,000 households are interviewed every 2 years. Interviews are conducted in 5 different languages, and the data are representative of the California population living in households. It does not include institutionalized populations or homeless populations. Importantly for our analyses, in addition to collecting information about health status and health behaviors and demographic and social characteristics, they also collect residential addresses, which we then use to geocode their locations and link their information with the food environment. And we used information from the 2007 InfoUSA business file, which includes North American industry classification system codes that we use to make an initial identification of a few different types of food outlets: fast food restaurants, convenience stores, dollar stores, gas stations, liquor stores, chain pharmacies, grocery stores, warehouse stores, produce markets, and finally, farmers markets actually came from the California Association of Certified Farmers Markets, not from the business file. Now, this data actually does include some errors that we know about. The one that we are able to address in our work is misclassification of stores. There is a lot of misclassification of stores because in these business files, for the most part, the stores are self-identified by someone who, you know, responded to information requested when they filed for whatever kinds of business license they needed. And so, for example, we found many chain fast food restaurants were counted as full-service restaurants in terms of their industry codes. So we did a fair amount of cleaning of this data set, but the errors that we're not able to address are those of omission of potential new stores that have opened up, or stores that have closed recently and are still included in the data file. In terms of linking this food outlet data with our health survey, we use GIS, as I mentioned, to geocode the locations of respondents' households and also the locations of all of the food outlets. We drew buffers around the respondent household locations, and we used different size buffers according to the urbanicity of the area where respondents lived, or the population density. In urban areas, we looked at the food stores within a 1-mile buffer. In suburban areas, we looked within 2 miles, and in rural areas, 5 miles, because we know that in rural areas, people travel further to purchase their food. And we looked at 2 different kinds of food environment measures. The first was counts of individual types of food outlets within the buffer. And the second was an index measure, which has been referred to in the literature as the Retail Food Environment Index. And this is an indicator of the density of food outlets that are less likely to carry healthy foods relative to those that are more likely to have healthy options available. And so it's calculated by adding up the fast food stores, the convenience stores, dollar stores, gas stations, liquor stores, and chain pharmacies, divided by the supermarkets, which included smaller grocery stores, produce markets, warehouse stores, and farmers markets. Oh, I should mention that in previous studies that have used this index, they've typically used a smaller number of stores. We've expanded this by adding dollar stores, gas stations, liquor stores, the pharmacies, and the warehouse stores. Right, we're looking at 2 different kinds of outcomes. The first is obesity, which was based on self-reported height and weight collected in CHIS, and also self-reported dietary behaviors. We're looking at 3 dietary behaviors: number of times that they report consuming fast food in the past week, which we categorized as less than 2 versus 2 or more, daily soda consumption, which we classified as less than 1 versus 1 or more times per, or sodas per day, sorry, and daily fruit and vegetable consumption, which we categorized as less than 3 versus 3 or more times per day. And we adjusted for several covariates in our analyses: age, gender, race, ethnicity, household income as percent of the federal poverty level and neighborhood income. I should mention that the neighborhood income data is from the Census Bureau. It's not self-reported. Or at least not in CHIF. All right. We conducted multivariate logistic regressions for each of our outcomes. For associations between individual food outlets and our outcomes, we looked at each food outlet measure in a separate model. Each type of food outlet. So one model for grocery stores, one model for fast food stores, and controlled for all of our covariates, as well as a separate model that included the Retail Food Environment Index. So in terms of looking at the individual stores, this is a lot of information on one table, but what I'd like you to note is that going down one side or down the column, there are the types of stores that we looked at, and across the top are our outcomes. And you'll notice that I've highlighted the cells that there are significant associations. And if you look across all of the types of stores, there isn't any clear pattern of association between any store type and our outcomes, with the possible exception of farmers markets, which was associated with obesity, fast food consumption, and fruit and vegetable consumption. However, when we looked at our index measure of the food environment, that was consistently associated with each of our outcomes. So specifically, I talk a little bit more about the association between the food environment index and our outcomes. So a higher RFEI, which is generally capturing a less healthy food environment, was associated with an increased likelihood of obesity, an increased likelihood of drinking one or more sodas a day, an increased likelihood of eating fast food two or more times per week, and a decreased likelihood of eating fruits and vegetables three or more times per day. So, to summarize what the past couple of slides, we found a few associations between counts of specific types of food outlets and individuals' likelihood of being obese and their dietary behaviors. On the other hand, we found that a less healthy food environment, as measured by the Retail Food Environment Index, was associated with both BMI and each of the dietary behaviors. So, there are a couple of limitations. One is that this is cross-sectional data, so you know, we don't know over time if these relationships will hold up. There is the potential for self-report bias. For example, we know that self-reported height and weight actually underestimates the prevalence of obesity in the population. And there are possible errors in the food outlet data, some of which we think we did a fairly good job of correcting, which is the misclassification of the data, but others which we were unable to try to correct because we couldn't ground truth the stores for the entire state of California. But there are a few strengths. CHIS is a large population-based data set. It captures respondents living in a wide range of food environments, and we did use objective criteria to define the food environment. So what do we think the implications are of these findings? Well, one is that conclusions about the associations between food environment and health outcomes probably are sensitive to how we measure the food environment. And so I think this means that researchers should try to, whenever possible, look at alternative measures of the food environment to examine the extent to which in their population and their setting, the specific measure is actually influencing their results. And the other implication is that, at least according to the results using the Food Environment Index, if we improve the ratio of healthier to less healthy food outlets, or increase the number of healthier food options, or decrease the number of less healthy food options, this could be a promising strategy to improve dietary behaviors and help reduce obesity. If you're interested in what else we have going on at my center. That's our website address. Or if you have any questions that you want to contact me about later, if you don't have time to ask them now, that's my email address. So thank you very much. Yes?
I have a question about why use counts. For example, use counts of stores. Is use counts of stores for a population per buffer or use pure counts? Because when I do something similar, I found using count the population or even the square footage, if you would say it has square footage of store type, the square footage retail for population as a rate.
Oh.
So did you consider using those rates instead of counts? Counts can be all kinds of variants, all kinds of noise.
Yeah. I think that's a very. So the question was if we had considered using some kind of rate instead of just counts of stores, and I think it's a very good question. In this work, we only looked at counts, but in terms of count per population, because we did use different size buffers for different population densities, I think that partially adjusts for a population density, but I think it would be interesting to maybe, if not necessarily look at rates, at least maybe control for population density or possibly square footage. Thank you. Yes?
I have a question about your buffer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the question was about the buffer sizes and why we chose those buffers and whether we had considered looking at walking time or driving time. So in selecting those buffers, what we were trying to do was balance the walking and driving for, because we wanted to use consistent buffers across all of the households, at least within a certain type of residential area, and because we didn't have information about whether people walk or drive to do their shopping, we wanted something that seemed reasonable under the assumption that, for example, in urban areas, people might be more likely to walk, but we know most people drive to the grocery store. And so 1 mile was a compromise between a walking and driving distance, and then similarly for the other areas. Yeah. Yes, in the back.
I have two comments, and I just want to challenge you a little bit on your findings. These are good nature, and I just wanted to hear
sure.
Your impressions or your thoughts. So one is that I just published a study recently that looked at Info USA and showed that it didn't perform very well on the ground. The ground truth can get you to less than 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And others in the room have published similar studies in other work now. So given that finding, the accuracy of it, I wonder how you interpret your results. And then the other thing that I find interesting is that, you know, all of these metrics, which are like the RFEI, you know, kind of lovely dichotomized things that healthier and less healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, you know, fast food outlets offer, you know, salads and, you know, like fruit and you know, supermarkets certainly offer
right, right.
Food, and I look at farmers markets in the Bronx, and you know, some farmers markets, 50% of what they were selling was, you know, jam, jelly, and paste, donuts, pie, and,
yep.
You know, all kinds of stuff you wouldn't consider healthy, but they get put in a healthy shop. So,
mm-hmm.
So looking at the accuracy of the data set, and also what you call what's in unhealthy, how you reconcile that one that we find.
Sure. Okay, so first, in terms of the accuracy of the data set, I think it's absolutely true that there are errors in InfoUSA data. My sense of having worked with this data is that if you're looking at associations on a broad scale, so for example, in our case, across the state of California, I think it's fairly representative of how likely people are to have access to different types of food outlets. The problem comes, I think, if you're trying to use that data to really know if someone in a particular location has two grocery stores or three grocery stores, if they have five fast food outlets or three fast food outlets. So I think in the broad picture, it's useful information, but if you really want to know what's going on in a particular community, it's maybe a good starting point, but isn't going to be the full story. The second question was, I'm sorry, can you remind me what it was?
What's in the different places?
Yes, okay, right. Yes, it's definitely the case that you can buy healthy food in some fast food restaurants and possibly in some small convenience stores. And you can also definitely buy unhealthy food in supermarkets and at farmers markets. The rationale for categorizing the stores that way is that the majority of the options in fast food restaurants and convenience stores are unhealthy. And so it's easier to get unhealthy food in those kinds of places, and it's easier to get healthy food options in grocery stores and at farmers markets. So it's true there is, you know, crossing of the healthy and unhealthy food availability, but in terms of the overall how easy it is or the number of options available that are healthy versus unhealthy, you know, that's what we considered in categorizing the stores as healthy versus unhealthy.
Question related to that in the measure is, you know, there's this broken windows measure of you know, whether a community is safe and, you know, high income or low income. Mm-hmm. And how do you know that you're just not measuring the broken window phenomenon by measuring lots of fast foods and dollar stores versus mm-hmm, places mm-hmm. with supermarkets and farmers markets?
Yeah, well, that's a good question also. We tried to control for that to the extent that we could by adjusting for neighborhood income. But, you know, there is a lot of research suggesting that not just the food environment, but the quality of the foods that are available in the stores in low-income community or differ across communities of different income levels, as well as the other things you mentioned, like safety and so, you know, to the extent that we could adjust for that with neighborhood income, we tried to. Yes? Yeah, unfortunately, we did not have a good data source for that kind of food outlet. But I think, particularly in a lot of the urban areas in California, it would be definitely interesting to try and account for those. The sample size, we had a little over 50,000 adults who were included in the analyses. Off the top of my head, I don't know how they broke out across urban, suburban, and rural communities, but I do know, I think the rural communities are maybe 10 to 12% of the respondents. And I can't remember how they split between urban and suburban. In terms of the number of food outlets, I don't have that data with me. If you're really interested, I could look it up and correspond with you about it later. Yeah, I mean, it's the whole state of California, so there are a lot of them included, but I don't remember how many there were. Yeah. And yeah, yes.
Do you find that reducing healthy food once you classify healthy, reducing the unhealthy outlet was as effective or ineffective as increasing the healthy outlet in health outcomes?
So that's actually a very interesting question that we couldn't really address with this analysis, because any change that either reduces the number of less healthy outlets or increases the number of healthy outlets makes that index smaller. And so we know the smaller index is associated with better dietary behaviors and obesity, or less likelihood of obesity. But we haven't really, with our analyses, tried to get at that, and I don't know if other work has tried to look at that or not. Yeah, but I think that's a very interesting question.
Great. Thank you all for coming to this food nutrition session, and